and welcome to another episode of Candid, where we have real talks with real people. I'm your host, Dudley, and I'm here with Anise, Bethany, and Shanae. And today, we will be continuing our talks on the orange economy with our guest of honor. I'll allow him to introduce himself.
Hi, people. My name is Shad Fur, S-H-A-D, press your space bar, F-E-R, Shad Fur.
And Mr. Fur, if you would. I'm sure everybody, you know, some people might have an idea of who you are, but you know, let's keep it cordial. Let us know a little bit about you. Who are you? What do you do? Why do you do what you do?
All right. Thank you. Truth be told, well, first of all, thank you for the platform, guys, and also thank you to anyone that's still tuned in and listening. Like I said, my name is Shad Fur. I like to think of myself as a blessed and magical human being. One of the things I'm passionate about is the entertainment field. So I make a lot of music. I record, mix, and master that music. I film, I write, direct, I star in the films, I act on stage, I host, I do stand-up comedy. Anything to do with entertainment is me, but at the same time, I'm just a really blessed human that loves to learn, loves to try new things, and I'm just here on this planet trying to make the most of it before it's my time to transition. Y'all got all that?
Yeah, we got it. So when it comes to you making music, what kind of music do you make?
I make any genre I could touch, man. I love music. I've been listening to like hundreds of albums since a young lad. I used to be a young lad back in the day, and I would listen to album after album under the furnace in the cave. Well, no, but I would just listen to a lot of 70s stuff, Motown stuff, a lot of hip hop, a lot of rock, a lot of punk, alternative stuff. So that's the kind of music I like to make, along with dancehall, culture, reggae, rake and scrape. It really don't matter. Like, all I care about is if it feels good. Like, if it gives you that feeling of, I don't know, like you get a blissful feeling when you hear that song, that hit song, when you hear a beautiful song for the first time. You know what I mean?
Feel you. So you've been making music since you were just a young lad, and now you're a much older lad. And I'm sure a lot of people want to know, how long have you been making music?
Interestingly enough, I always knew I wanted to be an artist and an entertainer since I was about 4 years old. So I really can't say when I started writing music, because it feels like something I've always been doing. But I started recording music when I was about 12. At 12, I recorded for the first time. By 9 years old, I had already gotten used to performing on stage. So I was performing at 9, but I started recording at 12. And then I started really, really recording and mixing and mastering myself at 14. So roughly about 15 years, 10 to 15 years.
So what platforms do you share your music on, and who do you see as like your audience? What is like the demographic like?
That's a great question, Anise. Everyone, please remember her name is Anise. Don't ask her what it means. We're all still trying to figure it out. But okay, so what I do is I put my music in as many platforms as it could be reached. So that means the free platforms like YouTube and SoundCloud and so on, but then also, of course, Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, Tidal, anywhere where music could be reached, Deezer, TikTok, Instagram's music, Snapchat, all that stuff. I just like to be available if someone's searching for me. And as for the audience that I aim for, I really, it's hard to get a universal audience. You can't get everyone, of course, but when it comes to my brand, I really want to reach open-minded people, young people, and older people that are on a journey of true self-discovery, not just living haphazardly and stuff. Like, I do want people to have fun, but I'd say my demographic consists of people that I guess, are passionate about evolution, about self-evolution and so on. But at the same time, I make music that's perfect for the party or perfect for you to just vibe alone. And so it's really up to the people to dive deeper into the brand and understand me more as a person or as an artist to really get to who I'm trying to reach. But then there are surface level fans and listeners that are just going to hear a couple of songs and vibe to them and, you know, maybe go to a party, get a nice wine to it, or chill by yourself and do some homework to it. And that's fine too.
Okay, well, I am very much a shot for virgin, and I only recently watched one of your YouTube videos, and this one you were talking about marijuana, and it was quite interesting how you angled that particular episode along with the song that you included. But it seems like you have a wealth of knowledge about the things that you sing about. What was your like favorite subject in high school? Because you seem like a well-diverse individual. So give us a little bit about your background.
Basically, you mentioned Weed the Musical. So the interesting thing about that is that when it comes to anything I pursue, and I did that with my best friend, my brother, his name is Charles the Fox, and we bounced off of each other creatively very well. But the song itself, I wrote the lyrics. I think he found the instrumental, or we were just looking for instrumentals together. And then I mixed and mastered it and recorded it. He edited the filming of it, and I choreographed the dancing for it. So basically, anytime I make anything, I don't like to speak on anything or do anything, like you said, without knowing what I'm talking about, because I have to have respect for the fact that the subject's been alive and around way longer than me, and that's way beyond weed. But you asked what my favorite subject was in school. I'd say, honestly, I've always been very into psychology, and of course, that's not a high school subject, but I was always into it, like, because to me, psychology is more than the study of the mind; it's the study of the soul. So you could ask any of my friends from high school and stuff, and they'd say, yeah, Shad was always a pretty deep guy. I was the kid meditating after school on the bench or reading some very deep books. And what those books did for me was they taught me how to learn. They taught me what learning truly was and made me appreciate that school itself was teaching people how to learn. It's not forcing you to accept any lifestyle or these subjects, is teaching you how to teach yourself. And so, yeah, psychology opened my mind up to the way that I am now. And because I understand people a bit more and I understand how to learn, when I approach a subject, I approach it with a certain amount of reverence and respect. I hope that answers your question.
But I do remember that when Weed the Musical came out, it got a little bit of media attention. So how did you and Charo feel dealing with the fact that, hey, you made this video on YouTube and now all of a sudden the mainstream Bahamian media is talking about it?
I mean, well, the difference between Weed, a Bahamian musical, versus the other things we made is that it actually does have a message that we're trying to get across. So the fact that people were able to watch it, because I think I saw it on one of those Bahamas news pages and stuff, and you have some people that get that as a joke versus other people that are like, look at these little scoundrels, these boys, they smoking dope, they throwing the future of the country away, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, man, how could you complain about, like, first of all, I get it, be mad at the joke if it's not your joke, but we wrote the song, we recorded, mixed and mastered it, we choreographed for it, we planned it out, like we are being productive. That's how I felt about that criticism. But like, not even just Weed, a Bahamian musical, I'd advise people to check out Konken Jutsu if you haven't, because that's the one with the Bahamian samurai and sword fighters. You could find it on my Instagram, instagram.com/shad_fer. And trust me, I feel like what we're doing, along with a lot of other people currently in the orange economy here, is we are really pioneering a new level of Bahamian art and carving out a definition of what at least modern Bahamian art is. And I'm very proud to be a part of that. And that's how I feel whenever people notice my work or say, hey, you're Shad, I know you from this or I know you from that. Like, it just, I feel proud. And that's whether they like it or not. I always feel proud, like, at least you saw it.
Hey, Tong Ken Jutsu has some of the best, Bahamian off-the-wall comedy that I've ever heard. Because I still can't believe that y'all didn't break out laughing when you decided to say, slap your head off, no jutsu. Yeah, you mentioned that a lot of people, a lot of Bahamians in the who are a part of the orange economy are starting to find themselves, you know, they're looking more and more like pioneers of the next thing that's going to take over the Bahamas. And you have recently found yourself in a project, in another YouTube-based project, but with other Bahamians. Doing some serious acting there. If you could go into that for us, please.
Sure. I'm pretty sure you're referencing Beneath the Gates, and that series was created and directed by Leandra Lee, and it stars several very talented Bahamian actors, including myself, and the crew consists of very, very talented Bahamian filmmakers and sound editors and creative directors and so on. And so, yeah, that's a story about a family that's a part of a gambling house dynasty, and the patriarch of that family dies. And so now there's a mystery which ensues based around who done it. Like, it's a whodunit style Bahamian drama, and I'm very proud to be a part of it, especially since people that know me from the stage on the Dundas may have seen me play more serious dramatic roles, but people that know me online usually see me do comedy. So it's really good to finally get a chance to play a dramatic role. I played Daniel Gates.
I think it's cool though, because you have a Bahamian, it's an all Bahamian cast and crew. And it's directed by a young Bahamian woman. So it's a really interesting idea you guys had going on there, because normally whenever you know, I'm sure you've experienced this more than I have, but whenever there's a piece of content made by Bahamians and, you know, it's received by the general public, a lot of times it's like, oh, wait a minute. This look good. Oh, wait, Bahamians make this? For real? Like, as a person who's been creating content for some time, you said over a decade now, how does hearing that make you feel?
Basically, when I hear that, I can't remember how I used to feel about it when I was younger, but especially now, like, because I'm so integrally involved in the underground scene here, and seeing everything come up and the people that are popular, the people that are about to be popular, the people that have always been popular. Like, I always think to myself, the only reason y'all think Bahamian art isn't up to standard or up to quality is because a lot of y'all ain't coming to the shows. A lot of y'all ain't actually following and supporting when someone makes something, so y'all miss out. Because y'all miss out, and what happens is when you miss out and then you stay focused on what you're doing with your life, years pass by and you don't realize that the person who was doing that thing that you weren't that, you know, impressed by has continued to do that thing for the last few years. And now they're actually really, really good. Like, people don't understand how hard somebody's working. Just like I said, with the Weed the Musical or Konken Jutsu or even my music and stuff like that, these are things that a lot of times I'm editing by myself or with like only one other person. When people see a Soya Boy video for a long time, Soya Boy was the dude filming that himself, editing it himself and promoting it himself. The same with Das Quay, The same with Nahum, Zaneo, Sarge. Like, Zaneo is such a talented filmmaker on his own. Like, I can't describe these kinds of people, but people like Cindy, Patrice, or Vocab and stuff, who find these niche ways of creating their own style of comedy and then curating an audience and stuff. That's so impressive to me. And to just disregard Bahamian talent as if we're not making waves, it doesn't make sense. Because I just want every Bahamian to know out there that where we're at right now, creatively, and what we have the potential to do is such a special and beautiful thing, because you could be a part of pioneering something. We're still technically, like, a lot of people went to Dubai. And one of my friends that came from Dubai said that, honestly, man, we are primitive compared to where they're at. And some people might see that as a bad thing, but I see that as a good thing, because it means that you could do something here that's already being done somewhere else. And all you gotta do is attach it to your identity, apply it to your identity, and all of a sudden it's something that's never been done anywhere. And that's a very powerful advantage we have in a country that's looking for new, looking for fresh, looking for innovative. And so when I hear people say that, I'm like, okay, well, you just don't know. But because I know, I'm going to make these friends, I'm going to make these connections, I'm going to make this money, and I'm going to do me and enjoy what I see.
I don't know about you guys, but one thing that's been very consistent with all of the guests we've had so far concerning the orange economy is that they are very, very passionate about uplifting other Bahamians with their craft, and also kind of encouraging other Bahamians to go ahead and support each other. And I know for me, I have this friend, and he's very influential. He's very heavily influenced with the arts in the Bahamas. And I, for the first time, went to the Dundas and saw a play, and it was very, very good. And I'm like, if I was never, like, for someone like me, I have never been, you know, kind of brought into that world. And so it was very interesting to see Bahamians actually, you know, like, it was on par with like Madea. It was very entertaining. And so I want to know, what was that point in Shadfer's life where he was like, you know what, this is my passion, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm going to put all of my energy into? Like, what did you ever have that point in life?
Well, Bethany, first of all, like, I'm glad you said that, because I just had a conversation with some actors literally like day before yesterday about the Dundas. And because I missed the stage in that medium, because a lot of Bahamians do not go to these Dundas shows sometimes, just because it's not at least culturally mainstream cool, I guess. Like, I can't describe it, but just like you said, you went there and you realized this isn't what you thought it would be. It's actually very entertaining, very impressive, like, and so much work goes into that. Like they have no idea how hard the actors work. Like, we gotta come to every rehearsal from work or from school or from our family, learn these scripts, and we do it because we love it. But at the same time, it's not like we're getting these huge paychecks and stuff regardless. And it's really, it would be all, because I just was a part, I just saw a play I was in called Smile Orange, based on this old Jamaican film. And that was one of the best plays I ever did. And that's the hardest I ever worked for a lead role, the most lines I ever learned. And as hard as we worked and as well as we did, there really wasn't that big of a turnout. And of course, you could always blame promotion, which is fine. But at the same time, like, I just wish more people got to see it, because I'll probably never have that time and that chemistry with everyone else to do that again. So I'm glad at least you got to experience a play. And to answer your question, I always knew, I think I knew I wanted to make music when I first heard Speechless from Michael Jackson. It's one of my favorite songs in the world. That's like my song. Like, if I sitting in a car or someone have control of the music and they put that song on, I gonna look at them like, really, dog? Like, or really, really, girl, you really could do that? Like, cause that's like, that song means so much to me. It's one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard, and I'll always love it. And so when I first heard that, I was 4 years old, and I was like, yep, I wanna do that. I wanna write, I wanna make music, I wanna make stuff that makes people feel like how this song makes me feel. And then from there, I can't explain it. Like, I just always had an extreme passion for it. But then when I was 14, I was already recording and I knew I could rap. And I really had a lot of confidence in myself. And I put a video out on Facebook and on YouTube. And me and one of my friends from high school, we just sent the video to World Star Hip Hop, just like, whatever, let's do it. Let's just see what happens. Cause they had to submit a submission type page. And the next day, all of a sudden, my social media is going crazy. Twitter wasn't even that old yet. And so I had 16 followers the day prior. Then I woke up and I had 316 followers. And I'm like, what, is this a glitch? What's going on? And then everyone's hitting me up like, Shad, you on World Star? You on World Star? And so, and that video is still there to this day. And when that happened, that put this huge battery in my back, because like that 15 seconds of fame was all I needed. Like, unlike other people, like some people get, I feel like some people get, you know, they pop off with something, but they, and of course they weren't ready for it. I wasn't ready for it technically. Like, I wasn't ready to seize that opportunity and be a part of the industry, but it taught me that I was worthy, that I had something that was worthy of world recognition. And so that really made me focus extremely hard. And then when I graduated on the acting side of things, I was lucky enough to have teachers and family that really supported what I did. So one of my English teachers, she put on a version of The Wizard of Oz that was like mind-blowing, and I got to play the Tin Man. And from there, when I graduated, I was like, I gotta do this some more. And so, and this is advice for Bahamians, like, you gotta look for the opportunities. Don't wait for them, look for them. And if you can't find them, create your own. And so I just went on Google and I was like, Bahamian casting calls. I went on Facebook, I was like, acting casting calls, Bahamian casting calls, until I found a page. And luckily enough, there was a casting call for the Dundas for a crazy play called The Melancholy of Susanna Turnquest. And I only forget the writer's name when it's important to remember it. So I wish I could remember his name. And he is an awesome guy. It was such a great play, and it was a horror. I never knew anyone was writing horror, so it was a unique Bahamian horror that we did in the Dundas in the Black Box. And through that play, just that one play, I met everyone that I was involved with in that play, except maybe one person I worked with in like a host of so many different ways, just from putting myself out there and looking. And that basically kick off the momentum for all my live performances. But honestly, Bethany, this is something I just always knew I was born to do. I could feel it in my bones. Like, I just, like, it was a certain calling that was so strong that I can't imagine myself being this passionate about much other things, you know? So yeah.
Well, you could feel it in your bones and I could hear it in your voice. So I guess we got something going on right now. But the thing is, you talk about you being an entrepreneur in your art and stuff like that. Do you see yourself expanding in this country? Like, we know there are limits, but do you see yourself kind of creating your own boundary, like creating your own space in this one little country and putting us in the worldwide market of the creative arts? Do you see that for you, or do you see yourself moving abroad? Like, where's your goals in that area?
Another good question. And just like when y'all mentioned how, at least when Dudley mentioned how you could hear often hear Bahamians saying, you know, like, or at least alluding to the fact that they don't expect quality from Bahamians. When you do give them quality, the first thing they say is, boy, you need to move, boy. I can't wait till you get from out there, boy. All you need to do is leave this country. But the second you abandon this country immediately and step foot somewhere else, you're going to get love. And I always, and I've been hearing that from I was young. So I always used to think of that more as a challenge, really, because I love the Bahamas. Like, it has its faults just like any other place. But I always told myself, well, we're not at war. Before COVID-19, we weren't dealing with any major plague or disease. We have poverty, but we don't have extreme, super extreme poverty. And then we have so many opportunities and so many allies and stuff. I love it. And then the country itself is just beautiful. I love the culture. And so I always saw it as a personal challenge as a creative to not just run away and try to find an easier way to do this, but to analyze the Bahamian people as an audience and understand why it's so difficult to succeed here. And I start to appreciate it more because I'm like, well, when Lil Baby came here, he had an audience. When Roddy Ricch came here, he had an audience. When Migos came here, when Cardi B came here, when Dexter Dops came here, when Alkaline came here, they had audiences. So what does that tell me? That tells me that there is an audience, that there is an audience that wants to hear contemporary music, but it also tells me that there's something that is lacking, that is preventing Bahamians from making a psychological connection with their hometown artists. And to me, I could have been like, okay, maybe they just want me to be foreign. But then I'm like, no, because there are popular Bahamians here. Like I mentioned, Cindy Patrice, she has thousands of fans and followers. Das Quay, thousands of fans and followers. Soya Boy, thousands of fans and followers. So all I've been seeing lately from a lot of artists is not the fact that you're Bahamian that's making it hard for you to connect and to sell. It's really just, how have you been trying to connect and sell? Are you branding? Are you marketing? Do you have merchandise? Do you have a website? Do you have business cards? Are you networking with investors? What is your live show like? Is your live show just you holding the mic and swaying back and forth? Or do you actually have choreography? Do you have backup dancers? Are you, could you sing live? Like all these different things. So while I could have run away, I moved, and I still could, and I plan to start touring other areas. I like being here. I see it as a challenge, and I see the possibilities, and I like that it's hard because it's what made me so versatile. It's what made me so good at the things I'm good at because it's such a challenge to impress people here. And so that's what I would tell other creatives and other artists here too, is like, take on the challenge, keep trying to answer that question of what's missing, what are they looking for from me that I'm not giving them. And even if there is no answer, even if you give them your absolute all, it's only gonna make you better. And so that's where I'm at with it right now, because I just have this dream one day of like, even when I've toured the entire world, coming back and going right by the stadium where we see track and stuff, and being able to fill that stadium out just like Lil Wayne would, or just like any superstar would. And I wholeheartedly see that. It's just, I'm willing to work 10 to 50 times harder if I have to do it. And that's where I'm at with that.
Speaking about like advertising and marketing your brand, what advice would you give to other young creators about like monetizing that and like the process of monetizing that? Because I feel like a lot of them, they've monetized it, but like we don't understand like the process to get there, especially here. So what is your advice on that?
Yeah, that's an important question too, because most of us are not able to live off of our art. And that's just the truth, the facts. It's not impossible, it's just difficult. And why is it difficult? Because most of us that are great artists are just that. They're great artists, but you have to also be a great entrepreneur, be very good friends with a lot of great business-minded entrepreneurs in order to monetize your art, because you have to learn about money. Like, there's no way around it. If you want to make it, because a lot of people wonder, why does this person that I don't even think is that talented, why is that person getting paid? They don't deserve it. But then you look at that person and you realize they are posting content every single day. They are actually connecting with their audience. They're going on Instagram Live all the time and talking to their audience. They go into live events. They go into networking events. They have a team behind them and so on. So some advice I would give to Bahamian creatives is study. Like, literally, you could study. Stop being lazy and stop giving yourself excuses. Stop saying that you know that anything is against you or that the opportunities ain't there. You could go on YouTube. I learned so much from just YouTube. I learned a lot about mixing and mastering from YouTube. I learned how to play guitar from YouTube. I learned a bunch of things. And then online courses I found on Google teaching about branding, marketing, all those things are available to you if you really put in the effort. And if you don't have access to a computer or anything like that, these people who you're inspired by, especially if they're local, they're not far out of reach. But when it comes to money, I want everyone to remember this if you are creative. Your ideas are like real estate. They are like real estate. What does that mean? The second you think of a great idea, that is property. We call it intellectual property. Now, once you have thought of that idea, the second you write it down, it has more value now. You've added more value to that intellectual property. Let's say it's a song. So I think of a melody in my head. Now, let's say I record that song, right? And I sing the lyrics, I put a beat around it. The beat itself has value. I could take that beat away, give that to someone else, or put it in a movie, or give it to a DJ at 100 Jams for them to use during a block. That makes you money. I could take the melody by itself and someone could learn how to play it on a saxophone or on a trumpet, and they record that by themselves, and that goes on to live its own life. That makes me money too, and it also makes them money. The lyrics, I could take the lyrics and put the lyrics on a t-shirt. I could put the lyrics on a hat. That makes me money from there. I could remix the song and put another artist on it or change the beat, and it gets even more popular. I could make a music video for it. I could make a dance video for it. I could make a lyric video for it and monetize all these different things. I could put it on all platforms. And you can make a TikTok, a bunch of TikToks too. Like, you could, that's what I love. Like, a lot of this stuff is free. I tell an artist, the first thing is invest in a phone, like invest in a good phone. Cause with a good phone, you could make as much videos as you want. You could interact on every social media network as you want. And so that's how I want you to think of your art. Think of it as property. And the more ideas you add to this property, the more valuable the property becomes, because you're creating different ways in which it exists. And that's the magic. That's why TikTok works for songs so well, because you have millions of people creating different concepts that support this song. And it shows, it's almost like your song becomes a tool. It's a vehicle that people are using just to, in this case, have a fun time. But even for my painters out there, like, make some prints. And I know you guys have tried, but get your own printing machine. Save up. Do your best. Paint on the clothes. Paint on products and have those products around and sell. Like, even study other people. Google them. Find out what step they took to get from broke nobody to famous, iconic, legendary somebody. Like, you have to study the money. Like, no one's gonna save you. Just hear me out. No one's gonna save you. I wish someone could, and maybe you might get lucky and someone comes out of nowhere and says, hey, I have $1 million to waste on your potential. Maybe, but odds are nobody's gonna save you until you save yourself. Once you save yourself and once you figure it out for yourself and your brand is strong, that's when other wealthy people and other people who have figured it out are going to be attracted to you because they know they could invest in you. You are a sound investment because you figured it out. So please, guys, figure it out. Realize the second you have that idea, that's already a multi-million, potentially billion-dollar idea. And all you have to do is keep giving it life by creating new things to support it. So yeah, get your hustle on.
How long has it taken you to develop this brand that you have here going for yourself?
It's taken, I guess, from the second the World Star thing happened until now. So about 10 years, because I was so much cockier when I was a teenager. Like, I really thought I was already deserving of, you know, a lot of things. But I'm so glad that I didn't blow up, because that gave me the drive and the hustle to learn what the label knows, to learn what a manager should know, to learn what a publicist should know. Because when you don't know what the people on your team know, then they could rip you off. That's how people get robbed. You have to know how to read a contract. Like, for example, they can't see this, but you guys could see my logo. And something as simple as a logo, like, you may not think it's important, but it's on my merch. It's on my merchandise. And I just got my first pieces of merchandise, and I love wearing them. They're comfortable. I'm proud of that. And it took a while, because, like, I had to grow up, and I had to be realistic about what it takes to make it. Like, a lot of people trying to get rich off their art, and truth be told, sometimes it's easier to get rich first and then fund your art, or you have to find a source of income. Like, it doesn't always have to be your art. If your art isn't paying you and you have to do something else to fund your art, there's no shame in that. Money is a tool. And especially while you're young, take advantage of that. Take advantage of the opportunity to get a job, or the opportunity to just hustle and make some money that could then go into your art, and spend it wisely, because it's worth it. You get things that last forever. So it took a while, Dudley. It took 10 years, but every single minute of it was 1,000% worth it.
If there was one thing over this 10 year period, if there was one thing that you could say was the most important thing that you had to learn, and it could be anything from, you know, how to mix your music. It could be, as you said, knowing the managerial or advertising side of it. If there was one thing that you consider to be the most important thing that you learned over this 10 year period, what would it be and why?
Well, I learned a lot, but I guess if I could say, I know you asked for one, but I'll give them two, and one is just going to be very short. The first thing is just stepping aside from the art itself and getting to know you. Like, be healthy, keep strengthening and nourishing your mind, your body, and your spirit, because the more in tune you become with your spirit, the more in tune you are with your spirit and who you are, the more you naturally attract things that help with your purpose. And so figure that out. Like, figure out how to eat what's right, and how to not be a fool and all those things, because your spirit should come before anything that's material. And that's one. And then the second thing I learned is that quality is so much more important than quantity. A lot of people see these artists drop videos and they have millions of views in a day, or they have millions of followers, or even on TikTok, someone drop a video and they get popular so fast, and everyone's so focused on the numbers, but it's really about quality and consistency. Why? Because, yeah, someone might have millions of views today, and good on them. You know, like, if they're leveraging that to make money and get influenced, then good on them. But if you put out a million great videos, a million great songs, and I know that's unrealistic, but you get the point. If you put out that much content and it's actually quality, and you continuously focus on getting better, like, That's what I did. Like, because people might be hearing this right now and they're thinking to themselves, who is Shad Fur? They're like Bethany, they're a virgin. And it's like, that's fine. Like, you don't have to know me now, because I am not, my head is not big. I do not think I'm famous. I do not think I'm super popular, but I know I work hard and I work on the quality first. So when you work on the quality first, even if the masses don't know you, the people within your industry, they know you, they hire you, they collaborate with you. So numbers will come. And remember that numbers could be manipulated. You could pay for ads, you could pay for streams and so on, but you cannot, you could spend as much money as you want trying to skip the hard work it takes to become talented, but it ain't gonna happen without you sitting down or standing up and actually practicing every day and doing what you got to do. So quality before quantity and consistency. So quality and consistency matters way more than numbers and fame.
We ask every guest this, but what do you think that the government could do to help and aid with orange economy in the Bahamas? Because I know you were saying mostly like the creators should work for themselves and boast themselves, but what's your opinion on, one, the atmosphere of orange economy in the Bahamas and how the government could help?
Well, that's a popular topic even in the community. So it's good that y'all asked that to the different creatives there. One thing I noticed is the Bahamas Development Bank is offering a grant that allows creatives to apply. And as long as you could verify that you've been active as a creative in the country for 3 years, you could possibly receive a MacBook Pro, which is nice. Like, a MacBook Pro is excellent. I've recorded so much music on just a laptop in my room. And a lot of that music went on to get me so much opportunity. So a lot of people want money, but I am out of the free laptop. And then what I do think the government could do, or at least assist with, because there's only so much they could do. The people have to help, but the culture of what it means to be an entertainer or an artist, the value of it has to change. Like, it has to be seen and viewed and appreciated as something important. And then the definition of Bahamian art has to grow, just like Bahamian people are growing because of the internet, because of just the times. Everything that we try to cling on as culture are becoming relics. They're becoming nostalgia. They aren't really reflective of what's really happening, the true revolution. So it's okay to love Rake and Scrape. It's okay to love Junk Canoe. It's okay to love Calypso. But what is not okay is to allow it to just stay what it was instead of embracing it, entering into the 2020s. And also, just because a Bahamian is rapping or making R&B or making soul music or anything that seems international doesn't mean it isn't Bahamian. Just because a Bahamian is drawing a certain way or dancing a certain way doesn't mean it isn't Bahamian, and it still deserves support, and you should still find a way to market it. See, a lot of times, and I don't blame them, the government is looking for something that could be definitively Bahamian, like this concept of Bahamian. And that's why Junk Canoe stays the way it is. And, you know, a lot of things don't change. And that's because we're afraid if we allow it to grow and we allow it to change, then we'll lose our identity. But our identity is more than these things. So that's what I would like from the government, to encourage growth, to encourage evolution, and then to reward it when it happens. Recently, the Ministry of Youth, Sports, and Culture allowed us to have the Show Me Music event. And I was proud of that. People like Dyson Knight, Sammy Starr, Lady E, they helped out so much with helping that to become what it was. Wendy, the list goes on. And of course, both ministries of youth, sports, and culture, even from this previous government. And that was a really good thing, because they allowed a lot of artists of all genres to perform, and that was a push in the right direction. The push in the wrong direction is that it's only aired on Facebook. Why would it only air on Facebook? Y'all are the government, put it on TV. I mean, I don't want to disrespect y'all, but y'all are the government, put it on every station if y'all really wanted to, you know, make an impact. And the Facebook thing is a good start, and we could always put it on TV, but more things like that. Just more things like that. Caring about these things, being a part of, you know, us evolving what it means to be Bahamian. So yeah, just care. Like, really, you could give me money and I'd love money. I'll always take your government money the same way y'all will always take my civilian money, but care. That's it. Just care. That's good. That's okay. Yeah.
You know, caring is a lot. I don't even mean just for the government. Caring is a lot. You're asking for a lot. And the government has a cabinet of like, what, 30 something people right now? So you're asking for a lot of people to try and care. But I actually didn't know that the concert was only aired on Facebook, because I've been looking for it so that I could, you know, see everybody, all the acts that happened. But now I know exactly where to go. And I think it highlights that, you know, you can do so much. You can do so much as a creative, but with our country's unique situation, a little bit of that government assistance ain't really hurt at all.
Not at all.
especially like you said, you know, I'll gladly take your money because you gladly take mine. This is an even exchange of money here. But
yeah, it is my money.
Yeah.
There you go.
They're public servants and community centers for creativity too. Those are awesome. Like when people create centers, because when I was young, there was this place, Compass Point Studios has been around for years, but we used to have a summer camp there. And at that summer camp, there was this guy named Dwight Jones, Mr. Jones, and we used to get to actually experience what it's like to be in a true professional recording studio with like the music equipment, even a dance studio inside there. We were acting and he was teaching us about the business and how to operate within the business, how to write a contract and how, even how to go to court if someone doesn't like live up to the contract. And we were kids, like all of us were still in school and stuff like that. That was huge. And then, but the government wouldn't really fund that. And now Compass Point Studios is no longer even a studio. And so things like that. And I don't like to point fingers. I'm not one to blame people because I'm an independent person at the end of the day. So these kinds of conversations, I get them, but I'm a hustler. So like, I'll make a way. But that's why I say just care, like do these little things that give people a place to go and an outlet, because I'm sick of people complaining about like, why are these young men doing this? Or why are these things happening, all this violent stuff? And I mean, it's because they don't know their purpose. They don't have any guidance. They don't have anywhere to put these things, these feelings, and they're not being encouraged to put them anywhere. And so places like those make a world of a difference.
You know, since you've been an independent guy for such a long time, you know, you said that you have to write these songs, you have to write your songs yourself, you mix and master them yourself, and you've been doing this for a pretty long time. I think it's gonna go over a lot of people's heads that this man really said, I've been doing this for 10 years. And the first time that you kind of blew up was when you were 14. So, and all that time span, all that, you know, music, what has been your favorite piece? What has been your favorite song to make from start to finish? Like every part of that song was just incredible for you.
It's hard because every artist may be able to relate, but all my songs are my babies in their own way. Certain songs I'm proud of because I never mixed and mastered with such quality before. Some songs I'm proud of because I just love the way I wrote it. It's the most poetic. Some songs I love because I've been working on being a better singer for so long that I love when I could hear the progress in my vocals. And some is like, wow, those are some of my best raps. But I guess I'm very proud of Save Yourself. This one called Save Yourself. Remember when I told you guys you gotta save yourself? That's probably my highest streaming song right now. And I love that one because it sounds almost, it makes me think of Prince, makes me think of Michael Jackson. It's very pop and funk oriented. And I feel like if I can make a full album with that sound, I would have one of the best pop albums, especially from a Black pop artist in a minute. And I know it, that song, I'm so happy. Like, I appreciate Y98 playing it so much. Like, they played it as if I'm like a premier artist, like I'm Taylor Swift or something. Like, I appreciate them for doing that so much, because that's the first song where I recorded it professionally with Charlie Brown. And Charlie Brown really, he didn't charge me for the recording of that. And then I got it mixed by a guy named Tig. Tig is the guy that used to mix XXXTentacion's stuff and a few different artists from Florida and stuff. And I gave him his rate for that. Then I got it mastered by a guy in Florida named Mike Fuller from Fuller Sound, and gave him his full price for that. And once I got it back, it was great. And now the music video is out for it. And it was done by iFocus Visuals, and is one of my best music videos to date. So I was just happy I could see that song full. Like, it feels like I could give it its wings now. Like, the video doesn't have a million views or anything yet, but it's one of those songs when, as people discover me, they'll be able to see that one. And there's one more called Away Away. I won't get in too much with the details, but I did that one with a talented producer named Benji, who sings Le Bum Bum, Le Bum Badum, Le Bum. Yeah, great guy. And we cut that one. I did that for National Heroes Day. And that one is slowly becoming my highest streaming song too. That's my second highest at the moment, but it's moving quicker than Save Yourself. So I'm proud of those two, just because I really invested in getting a quality sound from them. And I love my vocals in Away Away. So yeah, those two, Save Yourself and Away Away, are my two probably sonically the best songs I have out. So I'm very proud of them. First of all, if you want to book me, just go to shadfer.com, shadfer.com/booking. Bookings, really, with an S. No, booking without the S, sorry. And we can make it happen. You could even invest in my music. Like, when I say that, you could put up a certain amount of money, which will give you a percentage of royalties that you receive from my music. And you could be a part of the creative process. If you have a birthday song or a specialized song, I could do that as well for you. People commission me for those kinds of things, or any event. So shadfer.com/booking. And here's my number. That's right, I'll give you all my number, because this thing really hurt me until I really too famous, but I'm not. So 242-801-2655. And you can hit me up, just, you know, don't be strange. Or if you're strange, be good strange. 801-2655. And then as far as social media goes, SHADFER. So Twitter, Shadfer, SHADFER. Instagram, SHAD_FER. YouTube, SHAD FER. It's all consistent all the way through. Just type in SHAD FER and you will find me. So thank you guys so much for listening, and please join me, dive into the rabbit hole. I promise I'm taking y'all somewhere fun and worthwhile.
Yes, you'll hear some great music along the way, you'll laugh along the way, and because you cannot, you just might even cry along the way. So thank you so much, Chad, for being here and joining us on another episode of Candid. Thank you so much for being a listener to the show. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of Candid. You can follow us at Candid242 on Facebook and on Instagram. Always remember, keep it real, Bahamas.